You're listening to South Florida's good news station, WCNO Palm City.
The following is a paid program. The content is provided by HF Martech. WCNO, its staff, management, and ownership are not responsible for the content.
When I die and I lay me to rest, gonna go to the place that's the best. When I lay me down to die, going up to the spirit in the sky. Going up to the spirit in the sky. That's where I'm gonna go.
Investment involves risk. Prior to making any investment, an investor should meet suitability requirements. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future performance.
Prepare yourself, you know it's a must. Gotta have a friend in Jesus. So you know that when you die, he's gonna recommend you to the spirit in the sky.
Neither the opinions expressed nor the information provided constitutes a recommendation to purchase or provide investment advice. The material presented is not a substitute for obtaining professional advice from a qualified person or firm. Securities offered through Centaurus Financial, member FINRA, and SIPC. And now, the host of the Team Marquette program, Joe Marquette.
Pastor Dave, he is really something.
He can count.
He lost track from 10 to 9, but he picked it back up at 5, which is pretty good.
I just don't think you have to use all those numbers.
Are you telling me in the seminary that math was not one of the prerequisites?
Actually, you know, that's true.
It's true.
You really couldn't count on it.
Alan, come on, where are you now?
I'm right here. I have a different opinion.
It just was the first thing that came up.
I have a different opinion. I'm a numbers person, so the more numbers you use, the better.
1-888-221-8990. That is toll-free from any place. All right, class. This is the Team Martech Hour. You're supposed to write that number down. Keep it next to the phone. 888-221-8990. Toll-free from anywhere. Because today, we have Vince Rizzino, CPA, not only a regular CPA. Don't you like that, being a regular CPA? That's kind of better being an irregular CPA.
It's better than being irregular, right?
Right.
Better to be regular.
He's a forensic CPA, which means he recognized. This is an Alan joke. We don't want to tell it, though.
Right. We don't want to say
we're
it.
Never
is this
talk
a synagogue joke?
No. That was the swimming one.
Okay.
No, the chili one, we can't tell.
I don't want to talk about getting back from a trip from Chile. No, thank you.
Yes. We found out that Pastor Dave had a brand new undiscovered talent that particular time when he decided to memorialize Alan with his chili escapade.
Well,
am I phrasing this right delicately?
Let's talk about two things that are chilly. The weather down here is chilly for Port St. Lucie. And also, the stock market is chilly, except for today a little bit. But
that's very chilly.
Gyrations like crazy.
Well, let's just talk about that just a little bit. Now, again, I've got to finish off Vince here because he's also
finish him off.
Yeah, I know. At your age, nobody miss you anyway. It's not a big deal. A forensic CPA.
I beg your pardon.
A couple days, maybe.
My family would miss me.
Okay, a week. Anyway, Forensic CPAs means he's recognized by the court system as an expert witness, and he also taught college-level courses in New York.
But not at Columbia.
But not at Columbia. At another school, kind of small, right?
Small school, SUNY.
How, what's it got?
State University.
30,000?
Oh, my God. 50,000? More than 50,000.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. Little school. Anyway, and then Alan Love, retired prosecuting attorney from the great state of Wisconsin. Our special guest member is here today. The members that are not here are Dan Warren, independent insurance agent, Ms. Victoria Lloyd, Remax of Stewart, Mike Polis, mortgage broker, and Greg Fasula, attorney, who happened to be on the show this morning. And we had to be careful because we can talk politics on the other station, and Greg is, you know, we're all one side except for Greg, so we got to be careful. 1-888-221-8990, and I've got a minor public service announcement that Pastor Tom, those of you that have listened regularly to this show for a long time know that Pastor Tom has been running this place for, well, almost as long as I've been, well, I guess not quite that long, but a long time. 20-some years, I guess, huh?
Over 28 and a half years.
28. Right. Thank you for the math.
Well, who's counting?
But who's counting? Well, Pastor Tom is a collector of antique radios.
Yes.
And I mean lots of them.
Very antique.
So he got a hold of American Pickers. If anybody watches American Pickers on a thing, these guys go around to all of these crazy places and they buy stuff and then they resell it. And they're supposed to come to Florida in January. And they suggested to Tom that if you got stuff, you call 1-855-OLD-RUST.
OLD-RUST.
1-855-OLD-RUST. Not that they're going to show up, but you never know. Mm. You know, because, hey, I like the program a lot. I watch it quite often. I'm not a big TV buff, so when you get something that's off the ordinary, when they hit some of these very, very eccentric people that have collections of who knows what. Yeah. What always amazes me, have you ever watched a program?
Yes,
this?
I've watched.
I mean, you got some of these guys have like 5,000, 10,000 square feet. How in the world could they afford all that stuff to get it?
Yeah.
Or they inherited.
Well, they probably inherited or they accumulated over their years. You know, people like the pastor with his radio.
With radio,
sure,
yeah.
He probably did but that over 25
but he
years.
He doesn't have 10,000 square feet of radios.
No.
You know, I'm trying
at least not that we can see.
Maybe he might have been
somewhere. You know, if you spread them out, yeah.
Back in '04, which is 2004, Joe Martek, financial advisor, Greg Fasula, attorney, Dan Warren, independent insurance agent, started doing these radio shows with the purpose of educating people in our different areas of expertise because each one of us knew things the other did not. And then over a period of time, mostly because of necessity, but because people would ask questions even we three did not know the answer to, we added Vince Rosino, CPA, Ms. Victoria Lloyd, Remax of Stewart, hardest working realtor alive, and Mike Polis, mortgage broker. And in fact, a couple weeks ago, Mike had a guest that came in that is an expert on how to help people cure or make their credit worthy of getting a mortgage. And it was a very interesting show. Remember some of the questions? I don't. Alan, you weren't here, were you?
Yes, I was.
Okay, I couldn't tell. That's okay. Not for you.
It was right. It was really quite informative.
You really?
You know, I learned some things myself about this credit process and what adds to your credit score, what detracts from what kinds of debt and what it impacts, how it impacts your credit score.
Yeah.
Whether it's installment debt, whether it's mortgage debt, or you name it.
Well, one of the things that's important, and in fact, we had one other person that called in and said, well, why should I go to a mortgage broker rather than the bank? And the analogy I used was Dan Warren as an independent insurance agent. If you're an independent broker, you don't work for one bank, and the bank has its rules if you're going to get a mortgage. But if you're an independent, you now can go to 25 or 30 different banks, and depending on one person doesn't fit that bank, they might fit another one. And the cost is the same or less. I mean, it really is, it's insignificant, the cost difference, if there's any. And using Dan as an example, an independent insurance agent, if you work for a captive company, which years and years ago I worked for a company called Farmers, which is a captive company, good company. But what's interesting was somebody'd walk in a door and they'd say, hey, Joe, this is what I need to get insured. And my company, Farmers, would not do it. Because some things they just didn't do. So their rule, and most of the captive companies, this is part of their rule, if we don't do it, you can go to another company. Now, you go to another company and you say you're a farmer's agent. They say, we don't like you because only reason you're here is for leftovers. So it's pretty hard for you to take care of people that are not in the captive thing. So as an independent, you don't work for one insurance company. You work for the client. And if one company is not in favor, and Dan's probably got under his umbrella about 100 companies.
Speaking of Greg Fasola, look who's
can you
here.
Believe this? Okay, we have to clean up our act now. We have two attorneys in the room, and this is a scary thing.
Yes.
Greg.
That is scary.
Long time, how you been? Twice in the same day.
Yeah, it's been at least 3-4 hours.
Yeah. This is kind of a miracle, I think, isn't it?
Do you realize that Greg, his job is to... pass on assets when somebody is put in the ground and go to the Lord, and my job was to put people in jail. So we both put people in like a cage or
your
a box.
Your
right?
job was to try to put them in the ground, and his exactly job was to take them out. I understand. You know, that was an interesting thing this morning, Greg, that we had that one particular caller, and this is a question that we don't address very often, but it was something that we should more often. He called in and he says, hey, I want to get a trust maybe. I've got a house, my home.
Yeah.
And should I get a trust? And, well, Greg said.
I said, maybe. I mean, it depends
what
on.
What I like about all attorneys, they never give you a clear yes or no. No categoricals. But the answer is maybe, and I agree with that.
Yeah, because it depends on his objective, because, you know, it sounded like he didn't have much probatable assets. So what's the main reason for getting a trust? It's to avoid probate.
Period. Now, folks, I got to interject a story right now, and I wish we had a camera, because this is one of my more favorite stories. Because probate is a word that attorneys love. Now, and there's a reason why. And I'm going to give you an example. Now, we got Greg Fasola, attorney, Alan Love, attorneys, two sitting here. Now, both of them are going to start smiling when I bring this up. So, Greg, let's say I die. I know this is not a horrific thing.
Okay.
And I leave $1 million in probatable assets.
You weren't very smart then.
I didn't say, hey, look, since when did you ever think I was smart? Okay, now, and I'm dead now.
Right.
And I've got a will. And I'm leaving it all to my daughter, because I don't like the rest of my kids.
Right.
So my daughter comes up and says, hey, Greg, Dad's dead. He's got $1 million. How do I get it? It's probatable. And Greg says,
I'd say you have to open up an administration with the court.
Okay, Greg, what does that encompass?
Well, that encompasses filing the paperwork to open up an estate, having a personal representative named so that they can administer the assets in the estate.
And so now you open this up. What's the court cost? You got to pay so much to the court, don't you?
You have to pay filing fees.
How much is that about?
$400-ish.
$400?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then my daughter says, okay, so I'm going to give you $400 today and you're going to file it. And then how long is it going to take, Greg, for me to get this money?
Well, you know, most of the time 5-6 months, but if you have $1 million probatable estate, it's probably going to take a while, because you're probably going to have a lot of different types of
creditors,
assets, and, you know, properties.
Because
what happens
is you also have to publish an ad in a paper, and more than one, don't you?
You do, yeah. So that's a 3-month time period where you have to wait for creditors.
And people then have a chance to come out of the woodwork and say, hey, I'm his illegitimate son.
Yeah, but usually that's not what happens. What happens is...
Oh, illegitimate daughter. I forgot. Wrong one. Okay, go ahead.
All the doctors, all the hospitals, you know, they're very good at checking what's been filed. And you know, they put in their claims.
Now, here comes where attorneys... Now, you got to watch. We don't have a camera here now, but watch. We got two attorneys now. I want to watch the smiles and the hands rubbing together. Then my daughter says, Greg, how much are you going to get?
Well, I would say probably I'd charge double because it was Joe.
That's right. And rightfully so.
Well, see, I told you we get a smile out of both of them.
The aggravation.
But then after she hits you, then you come back and say.
I would say, you know, there is a statute. The statute says 3%.
Now, let's use a math whiz here. Dave.
Yes, sir.
You got to pay attention. This is heavy-duty stuff.
Oh, I'm listening.
Yeah, right.
I noticed that. What's 3% of $1 million?
$30,000.
Very good.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Right, you did it right in your head.
And you didn't have to use your fingers this time. This is impressive.
I used my toes, but you can't see those.
That's true. What he just said was $30,000. Now, Greg, if I'd have been a good father, mm-hmm. and instead of that, I'd have come to you and I'd say, Greg, I need to do a trust.
Right.
And let's say the trust cost $2,000 because it was a little bit complicated. Let's just say that.
Okay.
And now my daughter comes to you and said, Greg, Dad's dead. Got $1 million in the trust. How do I get the money? How long does it take? And what's it going to cost?
So what was the first question? How long is it going to take?
Yeah.
You can immediately start gathering those assets. And
you hear that word? Immediately. You hear that word?
Okay. Yeah.
Right away.
Yeah.
So any money that's sitting in the bank, any cash, bam, right now she can have it, right?
Right.
Yeah. Other stuff you'd have to sell or whatever.
Exactly.
Now, does the court get involved?
No, they should not. No.
Uh-huh. Mm. Wait a minute now. No court. No immediately. Court. No. Wait a minute. Greg, what are you going to charge?
I'm going to charge an hourly fee.
Okay, so how many hours do you guess it's going to take?
So who knows? I mean, I don't know how much.
Let's just say it takes 10 hours, and because it's me, you're only charging $200.
Maybe a couple thousand, something like that.
Wait a minute. We went from $30,000 plus $400 plus ad in the paper.
Right.
Plus 6 months to a year.
Right.
To $2,000 to do the trust, and maybe another $2,000 to, because there's so many assets to get through.
Mm-hmm.
So we go from $30,000 plus to $4,000.
Mm-hmm.
Is that fair?
That's fair.
So there is a reason for doing a trust, folks. And the bottom line is, those of you that ever think about it, not everybody needs a trust.
And I don't want it to sound like that's, you know, that the trust is the only vehicle. That I mean, there's other ways to skin a cat. And there's other ways to avoid probate. And there's a lot of people out there that they think they need a trust, and they don't.
One of the things that we do regularly, and in fact, I talked about this morning. I've got a retired client. They're both in an assisted living. They had an AB trust, meaning he had a trust and she had a trust. They got it back when the exclusion ratio was 650 grand, give or take. That meant when you died, you could pass $650,000 to your family, and there was no estate taxes. Today, it's what, $10 million?
$11 million.
$11 million.
Mm-hmm.
So you die today with less than $11 million, and your family doesn't have to pay any inheritance tax. They call it a death tax, whatever you want to do. So the concept was these people had that from years and years and years ago. Well, now they don't own a house, they don't own anything.
Yeah.
They've got a bank account which has got transfer on death on the bank account.
Mm-hmm.
They've got annuity contracts that have named beneficiaries. They've got a brokerage account that has transfer on death. And they have IRAs, which also have named beneficiaries.
Right.
None of those things are subject to probate.
Probably don't even need a trust.
They didn't need anything, technically. Now, and the stuff they had, they're now living in a small apartment rather than a big house. The stuff they've got, you could put that in a will. Their granddaughter's going to handle that, but it's called stuff. Nothing. There's no $10 million worth of jewelry or whatever. It was just stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So the concept that goes is that one of the things that we try to do, and I mean, and Vince, you and I run into this regularly, and Greg, you run into it more than we do, is try to counsel people on what they don't need rather than trying to. Because we have some people that we know out there that try to sell trusts aggressively, and the people don't need them, and it's very sad to watch what I'm going to consider what should be credible professionals doing that.
Yeah, but as far as that AB trust, I haven't done one of those in years. But when I first started doing this, I did quite
25
a few
years ago.
It was very easy to have over $650,000 estate. You throw in your house, you throw in some, you know, your retirement and some IRAs and things like that, and you're over 650.
The other side of the coin is that we almost never talk about, or people don't bring up, there are some other documents that to me are extremely important. One is a power of attorney.
Very important. Yeah, because why do we have that? To avoid guardianship.
The point is this. Let's say that if you're a widow or widower, you're by one person by yourself, and you get into a car accident, and you're in a coma, you're out to lunch, and you are not competent. That power of attorney gives somebody the authority to pay your bills, to buy and sell stuff as necessary to do.
To work on your behalf, to work do on what your you would have done if you could.
And
it's very important, because when I say avoid guardianship, it's not something that anybody wants to go through. It's expensive.
That guardianship.
It's time-consuming.
A terrible thing.
And,
The other side of the coin
is not a good thing for the person to go through that, as far as the medical exams and that sort of thing.
Well, there's also a health care surrogate.
Yeah.
Because, look, here, back again. If I'm a widow or widower and I'm by myself and I'm in a car accident and I'm in the hospital and I'm out to lunch, who has the authority to say, hey, operate, don't operate, break his leg, do whatever?
Yeah,
somebody's
that's a good question. If you're a widower and or not married, say you have no children around.
Doctors don't like just operating on you without somebody, say, giving authority, because they have liability. So they try to avoid. So that's a big one. So we've got, and then there's last one, which is called a living will, which I don't know where in the world those words ever came up with. One has nothing to do with what I call reality.
That's a good point.
But the living will simply says, I'm in the hospital and I'm on life support. Unplug me after a day or a week or 3 days or 3 hours, something. It just gives authority, because some people, they don't want to let somebody go and they keep them artificially alive for 6 months or a year, and they've probably been brain dead the whole time. But if you put it in that document what to do, they're bound to do. They have to do that.
I'm assuming, but I don't know for sure, but that living will comes from while you're living, you make the decision
very
while you're living.
Good. Yeah,
that's just my guess.
Good guess.
While you're living, you make the decision to withdraw the life support.
Hey, Greg, I got a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Is it, if you have a trust, is it necessary to have a will along with the trust, and why?
It is if, as long as it's the will that supports the trust. It's the type of will that says, if there's any asset out there that I forgot to put into the trust, so I didn't fund the trust properly, and it happens all the time. I see it. I have probates where there are trusts involved all the time, because people don't fully fund their trust. And so you have to use that will to kick that asset back into the trust through the court. So it kind of defeats the purpose of even, doing the trust.
But there's also stuff that can go in the will, which normally in the trust, you're going to put monster assets, real estate, something that's of value. Mm-hmm. Very often people say, what about a car? And I say, well, you know, normally you don't put a car in because you trade them every 2 or 3 or 4 years. Now, if you had an antique or a special vehicle that's something maybe worth $100,000, $200,000, it's a different story.
Yeah, and they can be exempt too from probate if you're married and have children.
So anyway, there's
so usually not necessary. If you have like an antique or something really expensive, then
does that automatically pass through to them, Greg? These personal vehicles and things like that? You don't really need a trust to get that.
Sometimes it depends. If you have a will, say you're everything going to your spouse type of will, usually DMV is going to just transfer it over to the spouse.
So what if you don't have a spouse? I'm going to leave it to my kids.
You may have to do a probate.
Yeah, there you go. Now, you do know in Florida on a title, there's no signature, there's no notary and no witness. You know that.
On a title?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we went through that one time, right, when somebody called in?
The key thing is that it's just a little minor thing. Mm-hmm. But in some states, you have to prove who you are when you sign the back of your title. Now, I sold Vince's Lincoln last week. He doesn't know it yet because I signed his name on the back of it.
But that's fraudulent.
What's
that got to do with anything?
Well, with you, nothing. But some people, it makes a difference.
That's Joe. Thank you.
1-888-221-8990. 89.90. You know, question about real estate, Vic. I just had a one of my good buds, his dad just died.
Oh.
And his brother that they don't necessarily get along too well.
Sounds familiar, like 99.9% of the
people. He's in charge of the estate. And he was asking me today, I says, well, who do you have that's going to list it? And he says, I don't know. My brother's doing it. I'm not allowed to have an opinion. I said, okay. I said, when's he going to list it? He says, well, we don't know yet. He doesn't know yet because Dad's house has got, it's not user-friendly. It's got some peeling linoleum here and there. And I says, yeah, but it's insignificant stuff. It's not really cosmetically bad. It's just not cosmetically good.
Right.
So, and I said, well, for me, this is my opinion. Now, you tell me if I'm wrong. It's season. I mean, high season, January, February, March, April, high season. Every New Yorker in the world is here right now or coming here real soon, right? Why would you wait 6 months to get the house repaired to put it on the market and maybe pick up another whatever? It might take six more months to sell it rather than putting it on now and explaining that there's some cosmetic deficiencies.
Well, you know, I look at the overall picture and you don't see it, just like you talk about documents. You know, I would go in there, see if they have a loan on it, if she owes it. Because you've got to see, you know, where they are with their margins also.
Stay still with me now. No loan. House is free and clear.
Great.
Country club community.
Great.
Uppity community.
Okay.
Lower end of the upper community.
Okay.
Can you think of a reason why they would wait?
And no, not really.
That's
no.
What I was trying to tell them.
No.
So.
But do you see like an uptick in sales during the season?
Yes. Oh, you always do.
Yeah.
In the season, you will see that. We definitely are in a rebalancing right now. So we're kind of a little, and every day I see people's prices are coming down because they were trying to go too high too quickly.
Sure.
So they're trying to rebalance. I do see we're not as busy right now as normally that we are.
This is the holidays, right?
It's the holidays.
Thanksgiving
and besides
to Christmas.
Being the holidays, I think a lot of people went home at Thanksgiving. This is my opinion.
They do.
And I think they'll be coming back. And I think a lot of people are putting their houses on the market and considering it now and want to really move here. Mm. So I'm going to tell you, I think, like Joe's saying, January, February, March, you're going to see, especially February and March, you're going to see
a ton of
action going on at that time. But for right now, people get a little nervous. Don't get nervous. I mean, the title companies are slow. Even stores are slow.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody's seeing the action right
any
now.
Any minute, though, it all cuts loose.
Absolutely.
And I know this, that April and May are some of the biggest months of the year for closings. Because people shop during the season, and then finally they make a decision like in March and April, and then big closing months. So anyway, and interest rates are still low. I mean, we're 5% or less.
People saying, oh, they're so high, people aren't buying. So high? Come on. It's ridiculous what
they're
saying.
Well, first of all, in order to say they're so high, they got to be younger than Greg.
I mean, it is relevant, right? I mean, it's
because we lived
compared
in,
to what, a year or two.
Yeah,
ago.
We lived in an atmosphere where interest rates were 15, 16, 17.
Yeah, go back to 1987.
Yeah,
right.
16 and 18%.
And we thought, hey, if it ever gets back to 10 again, we'd be hog heaven.
Yeah.
So literally, they're extremely good today, and resale houses are still less than new sale houses. So the market is balanced. What I'm trying to say. Remember, just before the recession hit. All of a sudden, resales went up way too high.
Yes.
Because people were flipping them and their interest is, mortgages were easy. Well, rule is today, you got to prove you can make the payment, which is back to the old system, and that doesn't mean it's hard to qualify. You just have to prove.
And they are, like Mike is saying, the guidelines are getting less and less, so they are getting a little more lenient again.
Yeah,
because the ball's been rolling.
Well, the economy's good. And that's always the way it works. When the economy is good and everything's moving, the banks say, hey, we got money. We need to get it out on the street.
Absolutely. And that's what they're trying to do.
And that's literally what happens.
And there's some great programs out there. Great programs.
Oh, man.
Where people don't need a lot of money. That's the thing. Call us and let us tell you and help you. Don't assume you don't have enough money.
Yeah, what happens is Mike was saying first-time buyer. Mm-hmm. I said, hey, Mike, I'm 104 years old. He says, well, as long as you haven't bought a house in the last 5 or 7 years.
Three?
Three. Whatever. I'm making it up as I'm going along.
I know you are. But the 104 is real.
One. 888-221-8990. Come on, class. We got Ms. Victoria Lloyd, Remax of Stewart here. You got Vince Rosino, CPA. Getting ready for tax season. He's growing gray hairs by the second.
I certainly am.
What is a tax season?
Well, you know,
do we have to pay taxes?
Yes.
So what would happen to you if we did get into where they said they want to, you know, just a fixed rate, like everybody just pay kind of the same thing? What would happen to accountants, CPAs?
First of all, you're talking about a fixed tax rate.
Yeah,
you know,
a fixed tax rate.
A flat tax?
Yeah, like a flat tax.
Well, it'll never happen.
But let's do a hypothetical.
The hypothetical, if it did, well, the CPAs do more than just taxes. Most of the CPAs I know get involved with financial planning. They do controllerships. They become part-time controllers for companies.
And you're a forensic one, and so you'll always be around.
Yeah, well, there's more than that. Even if there's a flat tax, businesses won't have a flat tax. Corporations can't have a flat tax.
Well, they have one now, Joe.
Well,
21%.
Yeah.
What I'm trying to, that's on profits. But then a flat tax doesn't have expenses. Remember,
it's based on, well, it depends on how they structure it. It could be flat based on gross, could be flat based on net profits.
Now, if you do it, see, here we go again. If it's based on net, back again, accountants have to come up with the difference between gross and net, which is technically the way it works today.
Yeah.
So much for the flat tax.
So that
you're right. It's for businesses, it might be a little bit of a twist. For individuals, it would be simply whatever your income is, boom.
Yeah.
You're flat based on income.
Okay.
No exemptions. No, get away with exemptions.
First, I've got to take a call. Now. Pretend like you're not here.
Oh, you're quiet.
Caller, it's Joe Martek. You're on the radio. Ms. Victoria Lloyd's running at the mouth over here. Don't pay attention to her.
Please do.
Yes. I have a question for you.
Go ahead.
Okay, so my question is, I have two car payments I just purchased, and I'm in the position that I would like to pay off one of the cars so that I won't be burdened down with both payments
right.
at the moment.
Right.
And my question is, I just bought them. One was in August, and I have already set up the payment repayment for that one, and then the other one was just recent. I haven't set the payments up yet. Is it a good idea to do that? And if so, would I be able to use that for my credit, to increase my credit?
You paid cash for these cars?
Well, they're financed, but I want to pay off the other one.
You want to pay off one of them, right?
Okay.
Right. Now, here comes the question. Your reason for paying it off is so you don't have the payment, or you're trying to help your credit, or what?
Yes. So that I won't have to have the payments, because a lot of medical bills are just swinging by here and there, and I don't want to have to deal with those and this. And so that's one of the reasons why I just want to minimize the payments that I have to make in terms of all the other things I have to do.
Do you have any, caller, do you have any other installment debt besides this two car payments you have right now?
A mortgage. I have just a mortgage right now.
Do you have enough cash where you can pay off one of the cars is what you're saying, though, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Well, she's talking in terms of a credit, because if you remember, that credit analyst who was here helped us and said...
I can't really hear you. I'm sorry.
Oh, sometimes you're better off, caller, with some installment credit, because that does affect your credit.
However,
but it might be a debt ratio.
Yeah. Well, here comes the $64,000 question. If you've got the cash where you can pay off one of them, the answer is yes. Because interest rates, even if... when you bought the cars and you got a loan... even if they had no interest, do you know what the interest rate was when you bought the car on the loan?
Well, this one that I wanted to pay off is 3.29.
See, that's a pretty good rate.
That's pretty low.
Now, you have money in the bank. Is that money earning more than 3%?
Absolutely not.
Okay, so the key is this. If you're not earning as much as you're paying, you might as well take it and pay it off. I mean, Vince, and this is a pretty easy one, isn't it?
Well, it depends. Does she have any other income? I'm not income. Does she have any other reserves? Does she have a cushion? Does she have a reserve fund? Because you don't want to use all your money to pay off that debt either.
Well, my plan is to, yes, I do have a small reserve, but my plan is to pay this one off. And then whatever I was going to put into the car payment, it will now go back into the account.
Into the savings.
Okay. If you're going to save that money, then it seems like it would be a simple answer.
I think it's a smart thing to do. You don't get any deduction for the interest payment on a car. You only get it on a house mortgage from a tax standpoint, right?
And then only if all your deductions exceed the standard.
And the standard is what, $20,000?
$24,000 for married couples and $12,000 for individuals.
Are you a married lady?
Yes, I am married, and I do have the other car payment, but, you know, that one I figured I'll just leave that alone for now, just so that I can, you know, I guess improve my credit, even though I have very good credit already.
Yeah, I will tell you, you don't sound like you have any credit problem, but like we were talking about this a week ago, if you got rid of all of your debt and you had no debt, that is not necessarily good for your credit. But you have a house mortgage, right, and you're making that payment, and if you've got one car payment, and if you have credit cards you pay off every month, that would get you a really good credit score.
It seems like you really should have a balance of between the three types of credit to boost your score: installment, credit cards, and mortgage.
Right.
And if you're timely with those,
you sound like you've got it all covered. Hey, listen, when you dump your husband, I want to get married because you sound like you got a lot of money.
Oh, well, I'm trying to.
Okay.
Thanks,
anyway, listen, you call us anytime. Thank you so much for calling.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. You're welcome. Bye, caller.
Do you remember years ago when we could write off the interest from credit cards?
Credit card interest, yes.
Remember that? So you kind of wanted to use
that. That was 20 years ago, yeah.
Yeah. Was it only 20? I thought it was...
It may be 20, whatever, 20, 25
over
years. It's a long time. That's all I know.
All it amounts to is, we were talking about, if you have too much credit, that can hurt you. Not enough credit can hurt you. There's kind of a mix. But when there's and when they were talking about it last week or the week before, there's a difference between getting a car loan or getting a house mortgage when it comes to how they look at your ratio.
And the
credit card debt.
Yeah.
It's a balance between the three of them they look at.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you a prime example of what you're speaking of. I know somebody that went and they got a car loan, didn't have a problem at all. But then they wanted to sell one of their investment properties. Well, they ran into a problem because when they did a title search, which they do on the buyer and the seller,
right,
there were some liens out there
on the property
that attached to the property.
Right.
When that attaches to the property, which doesn't attach to the car, because even though they say, but I just got a car loan, but that's okay. It's a completely different type of loan.
Yep.
So that person could not sell that property. He had to give it back only because by the time he had to pay all those liens off, it wouldn't even be worth it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what happens?
Interesting.
There is. There's a lot of things people don't realize.
Well, and literally these liens can sneak up.
Floating out there, these liens. They're not attached to that one property. It's attached to your name.
But the other side of the coin, it could be a quitclaim deed, which doesn't necessarily eliminate these things. There's all kinds of things to be considered.
Well, we've talked about those before where they've filed them improperly or signed them and then somebody dies.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when they die, then we can't change it, and it takes a long time to get that approved, to get it done. So
it takes the court.
You have to go through court, get a court order.
The key thing is, if you have good credit, let's say you've got a credit score of 750 to 800, which is very good. 850, I think, is the highest you can get. But if you're 750 or above, you're considered excellent. Mm-hmm. And almost you're going to get the best deals for almost anything. Now, how can you adversely affect it? My daughter. Her and her husband make...
Get his daughter involved in an adverse credit.
I know. Well, they make about $1 million a year. But what they do is they're in commercial real estate, and they have these monster, monster deals where they may get a check 1 month for $200,000 or $300,000, and they may not get another dime for 3 or 4 months. So what they do, they run up the credit cards to $100,000, then pay them off, then run them up. Well, when they went to get a mortgage, they had this $100,000 balance on a credit card. They didn't qualify for a mortgage because the debt ratio,
and they're afraid of these credit cards.
Well, because that is the way they operate, you know, and it's just the way life works.
Sounds like restaurant people in the restaurant business. Well, that's how they operate their businesses.
Well, and it's true. The key thing is everybody's different. It's not like when you don't have a regular job with a regular paycheck coming every week. You shuck and jive sometimes, depending on cash flow.
I don't think they're fair in how they do it, because every time somebody does a ding on your credit report, then your credit score goes down. It doesn't make sense. If you have to go there, your insurance company wants to see it. Everybody wants to see it.
Yeah.
But you can improve your credit score overnight simply by bringing down your ratio of debt. Let's say you've got $100,000 worth of credit card limits and you're using that whole 100, that's a detriment. But if you're using 20,000 of the 100, that's a positive. They look at different ways of figuring these ratios
out.
But
it does hurt when your limits are high, believe it or not, because they're afraid you might go out and use those limits.
For mortgage purposes.
I don't have to.
I don't have to.
Right. I know Vince. I just borrow money from him, so that makes life easy.
Well, look, you know, I can.
Well, he's Italian. Be careful.
Hey, I have very usurious rights.
What's that word, big mean?
You'd be very
Broken kneecaps.
Very careful.
One,
yes.
Welcome to the news. 221-8990. 888-221-8990. Toll free from any place.
Vince, I have a question for you.
Yes, sir.
We're getting close to tax season.
Yes.
And in 2019 for 2018 taxes, the rates are going to come down.
What's going to come down?
What's coming down?
The tax rates.
They've already come down for 18.
Yes, that's what I mean.
Yes.
So the money that people are saving from with the lower tax bracket, wouldn't that be a wise idea to take that savings and instead of spending it, put it toward your mandatory distribution on your pension plans?
If you're over 70 and a half.
Yeah. But what's happening if you're employed, it depends if you're retired or if you're employed. If you're employed, most people are adjusting their withholdings anyway, and we've encouraged people to do that because the rates have come down, so we adjust the withholdings so they're taking less out. So you're effectively getting it every paycheck as opposed to holding
on. Well, once you hit 70 and one half, if you've got, let's say, $100,000 sitting in a retirement account, you have to take out your required minimum distribution regardless, whether you're working or not working. It's just the way the system works. When you turn 90, if you're not dead, you got to take out 10% that year. A little minor thing. When you turn 115, they want you to take your last dollar. Alan, you don't have to worry.
Why?
You're only going to make it to 114, so I don't want you to worry about
it. Well, thank you for telling me that.
I need a little secret here once in a while.
He's a secret.
888-221-8990. We've got another call. Caller, it's Joe Martek. You're on the radio.
Yes, good evening. Just love the show there. Appreciate the information.
Thank you.
All right. Question a little bit off of your market there, but someone with Social Security disability, are they able to invest in a mutual fund or something to add to their asset or income without a penalty, or is there a penalty on that?
No, the penalty that you have is basically on earned income. I mean, there is limits as to how much you can earn while you're on Social Security disability. I think the rates now are somewhere about $1,000 a month. But if you're talking about investing what you already have into a mutual fund or something else.
Well, there are some rules. So if you're on disability income, you're not supposed to have other sources of income, whether it's passive or.
Oh, I don't think that's true, Joe. I could check that, but I don't
know. There are some cases. I'm not saying every case. But I literally have seen it happen twice where a person was on permanent disability, full disability, and they had a car accident and got $50,000 settlement.
Right.
They could not have the $50,000 settlement. It adversely affected their Social Security disability.
That's income. That's a different story. When I talk about income here, we're talking about that's not the kind of income I'm talking about.
Okay.
He's talking about investing his money and making a return on his investment.
Well, that $50,000, if they invested it, even then, any money that came off of that, they had a problem. Depends on the type of disability you have. You've got to be careful. And I remember we had another one of our faithful listeners that called you. He wanted to go into business, but he's on permanent disability.
Yes,
and you've got to be
absolutely.
He could lose his disability.
Well, that was again a case where he wanted to get into a business. He wanted to get into an entrepreneurial venture, which was going to earn him income. So he would have had earned income.
Yeah.
And there are limits as to what you can earn when you're on disability.
So the key thing is
to find out which one it is.
Yeah, you need to know exactly what you have, and one of the things that happens, you talk to somebody like Vince Rosino, CPA. If you left your name and number, he can talk to you after the show or tomorrow, give you a call, and kind of counsel you, because there's all kinds of different systems of partial, full disability that have different rules for restrictions.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Okay. And I don't want to be in any trouble with anything.
Hey, let me just tell you, this one in particular, they ended up setting up a special needs trust, and the rule was the money could not be used for food, shelter, or clothing.
Wow.
That's pretty restrictive.
Isn't that restrictive? Because that's what the disability income was supposed to be paying for. So what can they use it for? Fun. Oh, take a trip to Vegas and go gamble. Oh, yeah, take somebody with you. No problem.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense.
Doesn't that make perfect sense? This is our government. But bottom line is, whatever the rules are, we're not going to change them. You just need to know how they affect you.
Exactly. So sure, somebody can call me back. I'd appreciate it.
You got it. Thanks for the call.
Bye.
Bye.
Yeah,
I've never heard where you're getting passive income like that. It's different if you're getting a settlement on a case or that, or if you earned the income. That's a different story.
See, I had another one. Let's take it, a daughter on full disability, and dad dies, and he's going to leave her $500,000. Now, as soon as she got that $500,000, her disability income would be gone.
Well,
that's just the rule. So dad was going to set up a special needs trust with an attorney, and then the attorney was going to take a fee, and then the attorney would dole the money out, but not for food, shelter, clothing. You understand what I'm saying? This is a very sticky spot. You just need to know what the rules are for each individual person, because there's different types, and I don't know them all.
Yeah, I don't either. So I would definitely do more research on that.
Once you find out what exactly your system is, and the way to find out is pretty easy. Get a hold of Social Security and say, hey, what is my classification? And once you know the classification, then they have rules. And very often the Social Security Administration will tell you what you can earn on the side, if anything,
right,
and maintain and keep your disability. And you want to get that in writing. Let's take another call. In writing is very important too, because you don't want to violate this thing and all of a sudden lose your benefit. Caller, it's Joe Martek. You're on the radio.
Hi.
Hi.
My name is Penny, and I was calling. We listen on Wednesdays afternoons.
Thank you.
We've learned a little bit. My husband and I own our home outright. We have no minor children, but we do. How can we go about leaving the house to him? Can we do a transfer upon death?
To your children?
To the one, yes.
So you have one child between the two of you. If you die, it's his. If he dies, it's yours, your husband and wife, right?
Correct.
And it should be on your deed. It should say husband and wife, or HW. Make sure that's the way it is. That's important.
It does.
Now, Greg, mm-hmm. You have an attorney sitting here.
Yeah, I mean, you have different options there. You know, you can do it through the will, right, if you have a will. And actually, even if you don't have a will, if that's your only child, he would inherit that property anyways. It's homestead, so it wouldn't have to go through probate. If you want to make it like automatic, you could do a trust, right? The living trust, where should you pass, if he was the beneficiary, he would be able to immediately have access to the property. And the third way would be to change your deed, where you could add him as the life estate beneficiary on the deed. But you don't want to put him on your title. It would just be a life estate.
Now, the other side with a life estate, though, that would happen is when he died, then where would the house go?
Well, yeah, that's a good question.
It would revert to somebody.
It would have to go to his heirs, or
the key thing
would have to go through
using your circumstances. Sounds pretty simple to me. You should have a will. You and your husband
at
should
least
have
a will. Yeah,
a will with the power of attorney, with the health care surrogate, with all of these things we were talking about earlier. And this is not expensive. But the bottom line is, it's easy when you die and it goes to your husband, and your husband dies and it goes to you. But when there's only one of you, it could be a problem. So literally, the will would be the, wouldn't that make it, with, unless you've got 10 other pieces of property out there that we don't know about.
Yeah.
No.
A will would suffice.
Okay.
Okay. Now I have a question. With the life beneficiary, if we wanted to go ahead and sell the home, is there an issue with the life beneficiary?
Well, it could be. You'd have to have the proper wording in your deed to have the authority to sell.
Right now, if you just say, hey, we own the house and it's in the will and we die, we're both gone, it goes to my son or my daughter, whoever, that's simple. If you're not dead, you can sell it, do whatever you want. It's real hard to sell it after you die. Little humor there. Now, come on, wake up. Greg, I put two attorneys to sleep when I'm going through this thing, but that's okay. Understand what I'm trying to say? It really sounds to me, Greg, listening to this, what she's saying, that a will looks like the right thing to go.
I think a will would be fine. He would use that will. Say you both passed away, he would use that will to have it put through court to be petitioned for homestead, which is not a big deal. It's not a probatable asset, so it doesn't go through that probate process.
This just makes sure the title transfers from you to him legally.
There's got to be some way that the title transfers, and that would be a homestead order.
Yeah. This is a relatively simple process, and a simple will, unless you look back again, you've got 8 or 10 pieces of property out there your husband didn't tell you about, he needs a trust.
And if you just want to make it very easy for him, make it very easy as possible, then it's the trust, right? Because then you change title to the trust, and he would be able to have access to the property after you pass through the trust.
Now, trust costs more than a will, right?
Yeah, well, it's more work.
Yeah.
And then you have to deed it. You have to deed that property to the trust.
Right.
Based on what you're...
We only have the one.
Yeah, based on what you're saying with one house, if that's your main asset, you don't have another $10 million stashed around, do you?
No.
Okay.
Well, I hate to say this, but we do not have a will.
Well, I will tell you, honestly, you really should.
A lot of people don't.
It doesn't cost that much to do it, but understand this. A good attorney is going to do the will, the power of attorney, the health care surrogate. See, here's one of the problems that comes up. Today, the two of you, you're and your husband, if something happens to him, he's in the hospital, you're his wife, you can make decisions for him. He can make decisions for you. But if something happens to one of the other of you and there's only one left, it gets complicated. So the will and the power of attorneys, these documents, really just, I'm not saying you should go ahead and die, but literally, you then can at your leisure.
Thanks, Joe.
You're welcome. Anytime I can help.
But when you're talking estate planning, it's not only dying, it is taking care of assets and taking care of your health.
It's like the living will we talked about earlier. It's called, hey, plug them in or unplug them, you know, at some point. These things are just smart things to do, and they don't take that much time, and they don't cost that much money.
And what happens in a situation where, God forbid, both people get into an accident and they're both in a coma?
Yeah.
That's a good question.
What I'm saying. You have these health care surrogates and the power of attorney that are there to take care of these situations. And, it never happens to you or me. It's always somebody else, right? We read about it in the paper every day. But it does happen. So
I had that for my parents, and it worked out perfect.
Yep. All right, girl. Does that answer your question?
Yes. Is there someone in the group that could possibly help us out with that or point us in the right direction?
We happen to have this guy sitting here named Greg Fasula, attorney. Where do you live?
Port St. Lucie.
Isn't that a coincidence? He's in Port St. Lucie. He'll give you a call off the air and talk to you and counsel you off the air, okay?
Awesome. Thank you so much, and we really appreciate you guys.
Thank you for listening.
Keep listening.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Take care. Bye.
You know, it's a situation that we just don't think about. We take it for granted. Everybody's sitting here because we do it constantly. But, you know, it was like the fella called in. You haven't done it. How do you know it?
Yeah, that's true.
About half the people I inquire about a will say they don't have one.
Yeah.
It amazes me that they don't
have
one.
Well, they have, and then they don't update them either.
That's true, too.
That's a bad thing.
Well, that's another problem. Let's say you have a will that you did in New York 20 years ago. Now you're in Florida.
Yep.
That will may not be valid in Florida. You need to go find out what the law is in each individual state.
Well, even in Florida, so you're here, and then you buy another property, or you buy a lot, or you make changes.
Sure.
And they don't make them. They say they're going to do it, and then they don't. Well, so that makes it.
We have seen horror story after horror story. I had one of one of my favorite ones. 4 minutes left. Husband and wife. They owned a house together, and they had a trust, but they were private. They wouldn't show me the trust. I'm their financial advisor, but they wouldn't show it to me. So by and by, he dies. And the wife says, Joe, husband died. We don't have the house in the trust. The attorney that did the trust said, when one of you dies, come on down and I'll put it in the trust. So Dan and I were sitting here, Greg, why would he do that? Greg says, I'm not sure. And Dan and I both know money. Anyway,
well,
I said, I know. Mm-hmm. So I said, look, I'll take you down to the courthouse and we'll put your house into the trust. And you buy me lunch at McDonald's. You know, this is a lot cheaper than going to an attorney to do it. So we get to the courthouse. The house was not deeded husband and wife.
Yeah, and I think that's what was the assumption made there by the attorney, because usually it is, but it's not always.
Let me ask you this. I've seen cases. Should that attorney should have been shot? Or at least hung up on the rack, right? Because if he's not supposed to assume, this guy is getting paid to, that's his job, right? Greg, come on.
Well,
be nice. Yeah, I know it's your competition.
Wouldn't be a bad idea to check out the deed.
All I'm trying to say is, we now then had to go through probate on his half of the house. Luckily, they had three children. They didn't have stepchildren. Can you imagine? And we've seen it happen with stepchildren where they don't agree. They go, hey, you're going to have to sell the house and give me my third, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
Luckily, these were all their natural children, so they all signed off, but it had to go through the system.
Yeah.
So you got to be careful, making sure it says husband and wife on the deed. Once it says that, you can go ahead and get rid of one of them, and it's your house.
Right.
You want to get rid of one of them?
And then it comes yours?
You may be in jail, but you're still your house.
There you go.
1-888-221-8990. We got about 2 minutes. 2 minutes left. We may not have enough time to take another call. But
well, let me ask Greg a question. Greg, what would happen in a case where you've got husband and wife in a car, and there's a bad accident on the freeway, and the paramedics come, and they're both dead? Who determines, or how do they determine who died first in a case like that? Because that affects the way the estate, doesn't
That's
it?
That's a good question. I mean, you
usually
may,
it's the wife because she talks too much. You know that.
Never.
No comment.
That's a good question. Now that's going to depend on who the beneficiaries are. If they have different beneficiaries, sometimes that's not going to really even matter if they're the same beneficiaries of both. But say they do have different beneficiaries, different wills, different trusts, then they may have to split assets.
Can be complicated.
Yes, it can.
Everything can be complicated, but you know.
I never even thought about that.
Well, it's a rare occurrence, but it does happen.
Yeah.
Well, that's what attorneys are for. We have to think of issues to make sure that people don't get into problems. Right.
Yeah.
Greg?
Yeah. And most wills are going to have a simultaneous death clause where should one of your beneficiaries die real close to that person's death, that it's going to bypass that person's estate. So for administration purposes, you can just bypass that person's estate and go to who the other beneficiaries are.
Well, right, we're out of time.
15 seconds. You know, we're on our way.
Until is that a simultaneous mic cutoff here? That
you got a simultaneous mic cutoff. He just goes kashunka and throws the axe, and we're gone. Hey, until next week, thanks so much. Bye.
Thank you.
God bless you.
You've been listening to the Team MarTech program. The Team MarTech program is a paid program. The content was provided by HF MarTech. WCNO, its staff, management, and ownership were not responsible for its content. Investment involves risk. Prior to making any investment, an investor should meet suitability requirements. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future performance. Neither the opinions expressed nor the information provided constitutes a recommendation to purchase or provide investment advice. The material presented is not a substitute for obtaining professional advice from a qualified person or firm. Securities offered through Centaurus Financial, member FINRA and SIPC, and Michael Paulus with East Coast Mortgage Lenders, NMLS number 353429. Tune in next Wednesday at 4 p.m. for the Team MarTech program here on WCNO 89.9 FM. For more information, Team MarTech is available at 772-678-7725.